Hello, all you positive heads out there. Thanks for tuning your beautiful brainwaves into another episode of the Positive Head Podcast, which I'm excited to say we are now airing 5 days a week. Once a week, you can still hear an interview with a different consciousness changemaker that is out there working tirelessly to help catalyze change and expand awareness across Spaceship Earth. But now, also, in addition to the weekly interview, on the other 4 weekdays, you can tune in to myself and my co-host, Dalian, giving interpretations of our favorite thought-provoking quotes, sharing a bit of inspiring or mysterious news, taking questions from the audience, and digging into any other mind-expansive topics we deem worthy of discussion. And if you enjoy the Positive Head Podcast, please be sure to follow us on iTunes by subscribing there, and also be sure to leave us a good review. In the podcast world, good reviews and subscribers on iTunes really are the holy grail. I mean, the more subscribers and good reviews you get, the more exposure you get. So if you love the show, or even just like it a little bit, please subscribe, give us a good review on iTunes. I assure you the support will be very much appreciated, and I'm confident the good karma gods will rain blessings down upon thee for doing so. Also, today's episode is sponsored by Procabulary.org. Procabulary offers a brilliant new online language course that I just recently completed myself called Core Language Upgrade. The course material is designed to help you analyze the way you use your words and language to create your reality. I personally believe the words you choose to speak or write out is referred to as spelling for a very good reason. You're literally casting an energetic spell every time you open your mouth, which means it's of the utmost importance that you have a foundational understanding about the power or lack of power that the words you're choosing to use conjures up. I strongly believe language mastery is a highly important skill set that way too few people have taken it upon themselves to become educated on. And what Procabulary does is actually provides you with an incredibly easy-to-follow roadmap that only takes about 10 minutes a day spanned over 21 days to complete, which shows you how to go about changing your language patterns so that you can start getting better results in every aspect of your life. Now, as a Positive Head Podcast listener, if you decide to go to Procabulary.org and purchase the Core Language Upgrade course, you'll get 33% off if you use the promo code POSITIVEHEAD, all one word, on the checkout page. The retail price for Core Language Upgrade is normally $299, and I'd say it's really worth every penny of that, but it's especially worth it after your 33% Positive Head discount because it drops the price to $199. That's a crazy good deal that I had to do some serious convincing to get the guys at Procabulary to give to our listeners. So I really hope some of you will take advantage of it while it lasts. Also, if you need more convincing about the power of Procabulary, check out Positive Head Podcast number 20, where I actually interview Procabulary co-founder Mark England, and we discuss language mastery in great detail. All right, without further ado, on today's interview episode, I'm happy to have Sevan Bomar here with me on the show. And if my energy appears to be through the roof on this one, it's probably because Sevan is founder of SecretEnergy.com. Sevan is a widely known spiritual teacher committed to the universal transformation of humanity and involution for all beings. After freely distributing his self-published book, titled The Code to the Matrix, he has been on a nonstop mission of developing step-by-step spiritual activation and interactive enlightenment via various innovative platforms. Hello, Sevan. Welcome to the show.
Oh, Ms. Brandon, it's excellent to be on Positive Head, and thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's a real pleasure. I've been looking forward to this one for quite some time. You've got a wide array of knowledge and wisdom that you can share with the audience from everything that I've come across that's out there that you put out there. So I look forward to not only for myself to kind of pick your brain and, you know, because it's different with different interviews. You know, sometimes you kind of know what you're going to get. And with others, it's like, oh, man, I could talk to this guy probably for 3 or 4 hours. So I'll try right. and be as concise as possible. So first things first, why don't you tell us a little bit about your history. How'd you get started on this unique spiritual path that you're on?
Okay. Yeah. Well, actually it really is kind of climaxed for the last 7 years. And, so it's had me, you know, quite energized because, you know, it's been a 7 year climax in every tense, but obviously this is something that I've been really going through all my life as most of us, if not all of us are on some kind of spiritual quest, but I can definitely say that, for me, it's been because since I was younger that I began studying spiritual knowledge. It was kind of a prerequisite in the household, but really spiritual knowledge on a depth level, not really just on a dogmatic or religious aspect. And of course, just like everyone that may be submerged in that kind of reality when you're younger, I kind of had a slingshot effect. So I went out in the world and really did my thing. And somewhere in my late 20s, I really had a massive spiritual awakening again. And I decided to really get deeper into what I had already a lot of information, a lot of experience in. And personally, this run has been after the authorship of The Code to the Matrix, which again was about 7 years ago. And I actually had published the book or self-published the book just as a way to sort of kind of say goodbye to everything. I mean, it was my way of, in a certain sense, getting the crystal skull out of my brain. I had received a lot of information, a lot of synchronicity and codes and those kind of things. And I felt like if I shared those with humanity, that would be my last will and testament in a certain sense to what I needed to do in this reality. And it turns out that after putting that book out, that it received really rave reviews. And I think it got probably about 500,000 reads in 1 week. So it went viral. And after that, you know, I got all these emails because I happened to put my information in the end of the book. And I start getting these emails from people asking me more about different topics in the book and also what I was doing now. So I decided to start a little small website. It was called theresistance2010.com or resistance2010.com. It's still up. We really use it as an archive. But I started that website, which was a social network, and people started joining. And I began to continue to share the information that I was experiencing in real time. So that's really what's somewhat different about this message is that I really just document what I'm going through and what I'm experiencing. And I found that that's been very synchronistic with others that are on this same path. And so now we look up 7 years later, it's actually, I saw the day that we were just about to hit 18,000 members. Obviously, we've moved out of the Resistance 2010, and we've gone into a larger social network that I built called Secret Energy. And what it really features there is what I call advent into open source spirituality, where we've got all the information that we've collected for the last 7 years for all the people that have been involved. And we've placed it into different aspects on the platform, like a question and answer section and obviously a blog section, forum section, videos. There's also a full database of radio shows, which I'll definitely make sure that I put Positive Head in there. And also spiritual speakers that we've come across over this period of time that we've known to be rather instrumental in our progress. So that's what's going on now. But of course, you know, I'm giving the short compressed version and it's just been amazing.
Yeah. Well, you know, speaking of the whole ride that you're on and synchronicity, you mentioned synchronicity, and of course, that's something we'll get to later, you know, hearing a story of synchronicity, which I always, you know, hound my guests to share any story of synchronicity, because I just absolutely love stuff like that. And this podcast actually started with a little bit of that. And I'll just go ahead and share that as a teaser synchronicity story. You know, we have a mutual friend, Tim Powers, and Tim I was actually just checking out some different podcasts and things out there and came across you. You have a podcast as well, Astral Quest, correct? And I came across Astral Quest and I'm checking it out. I'm like, whoa, this is right up my alley. I love how deep some of this information is. On my note of people to reach out to and talk to about an interview. Well, literally within 12 hours, I get a message from our mutual friend, Tim, you've got to talk to Sevan, you know, and I'm like, oh, he's the last person on my large list of desired interviewees that I had just put on there. So I'm like, okay, I definitely am meant to talk to this guy. And, you know, quite honestly, I've heard of the Code to the Matrix. It sounds familiar to me. I know it's come across my, you know, screen at some point, but I've never read it. So if you wouldn't mind, tell us a little bit. I'm very curious, you know, what all is entailed in that book.
Well, you know, I guess what people reading The Code to Matrix now will have to keep in mind is that the book was written 6 years ago, and I had just basically come into a large amount of information through a process that I'll share later on in the conversation about, you know, those synchronicities are very positive, what do we say, fringe or paranormal experiences, I'll say. And so what happened was, is that I translated this book from what was going on in my consciousness about the language, mainly and about religion. And at the high point of the book is really just showing how the language is something that can't really be reinvented very fast. So if we understand, or what I say is understand, the real meaning behind the words, I love that. We can actually uncover a story that is rather ancient. and this story will explain many things to us. Basically, the things that we really want to know about, like, why am I here? What happens when I die? You know, and why is society this way? You know, and the major questions, and that's done with English. But as we've gone on, we've come to discover that this is actually embedded within many languages. And the further that you go back, the really the more concentrated the message actually becomes. And so the code to the Matrix, actually, if you remember in the movie The Matrix, the code to the Matrix is actually what the agents were looking for. It was the keys and the tents to Zion. And, you know, all of it's, as far as the movie The Matrix, very coded. It's, you know, there's a lot of kind of deception and disinformation going on in there. But just the idea of there actually being some type of code that can unlock things is really the depth of the message in the code of The Matrix. And sure enough, that message has definitely unlocked the consciousness of thousands of people now. And they've gone on to begin to decipher their own words. And so, yeah, it's just really one of those major, it's for the youth in a tense. It gets the energy going and it gets a person to gain the ability to kind of wipe the slate clean with all of their religious systems and the programming and all that stuff, and to really start from the aspect of self-empowerment. And but also really knowing that that goes into something that's not just paranormal, but superhuman, to begin to unlock abilities and to begin to unlock things that are in the depth of our subconscious.
Absolutely. Yeah. When you start to realize what is actually there in potential, it's really overwhelming, because we've had all these references to superheroes and superhuman abilities in media and movies and books for ever. And now you're actually seeing people who can do some of these things. We just covered a story on a 12-year-old girl who's reading with her eyes completely blindfolded using her third eye. I mean, there's so many fascinating things that people are realizing that they can do. So I definitely, even though it's been a minute since you wrote it, I certainly need to go and check it out. And I'm assuming it's still available somewhere online to download.
For sure. Yeah. If you just type in the code to the Matrix PDF, you'll get quite a few people that have uploaded it, and you can download it for free. There's a final, I don't even think the book made it its final edit, but we did do just a recent edit on the book. So you should find the one that's the best edited. But my main concern was just getting the book out to people, because quite frankly, I thought that, you know, it was going to be the end of me anyway, because the information is indeed so potent, and it does unlock the abilities within the human consciousness, because it really triggers a lot of what I would say is something that we're all experiencing, but you sometimes need that confirmation. And then it starts to introduce a blueprint, if you may, that allows you to find the connection with everything in the reality, what we call the as above, so below, or the microcosmic and the macrocosmic connection within self. And so, again, it's a major activation for the individual who has the opportunity to read it. It's very dualistic. Like, these days, I've really been digging deeper into neutrality and what that really means, which can often be confused. But it's perfect for the person who's just coming into this and, you know, fighting in a tense. That's why we started the resistance against a lot of the mind control and things that we need to build a pretty strong immunity to. And so this is the resistance as in immunity. And the book introduces the person to a lot of tools to gain that foundation, because, you know, you're going to face a lot of people that try to question you about what you believe in and what's really going on. So you need something else to check things back to, if you may, in order to become more stern and have a strong foundation. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah. Yeah. And it sounds like, you're referencing something that I believe a lot of people that are starting out on a spiritual path, so to speak, or waking up, coming online, so to speak, go through. Yeah. And that is realizing the negative and the positive, and the them versus us. And as you evolve in your own, at least for me, as I've progressed, I've become more and more aware and accepting of, well, those that are on the other side are, in a sense, playing their role perfectly. And it's all part of this holistic view, so it makes it less threatening, I suppose, in some sense. Those who are still
the dance,
right? Exactly. That's exactly what it is. So it's a great way to put it. So when you say you thought you were going to be checking out, so am I hearing what I think I'm hearing, that you're feeling at the time you were writing the book, you're putting this information out there, you assumed that the powers that be were going to take you out, essentially, after you released some of this potent information?
Well, I knew that the powers that be were hands off in a certain tense when it came to me, but personally, because of the paranormal experiences, if you may, the energetic potential behind what I had unlocked within my own body, I was always aware of many different things. A lot of stuff was going on that gave me the conclusion, without a doubt, that there was in fact other dimensions. There was in fact other realms. I did have and do have certain powers and abilities. And I felt like that I was always looking for the last thing that I need to do before I basically catch the next portal out of here. So I felt that's what was going to happen, that once I transmitted this information, which was to me the end of the mission, I didn't know then that it was actually the beginning of something very massive. But once I did that, then I would have that pass, if you may, to go ahead and get into something else, because of course the Earth can be rather redundant. But after a while, I came up with a term: if you don't see the portal, be the portal. And that's when I decided, instead of being so flighty about the whole thing and just ready to, you know, just go about my own, just to remain here and to begin to transmit a message that's been rather strong for the last 6 years. We never really say the same thing twice. We've delved into a deep amount of this information. I mean, and it's not just reading it. We're also experiencing it, as, you know, I've made different adjustments to not only my mind, my body, my soul. So this has got into food. This has gotten into symbols. This has gotten into a lot of different things. So I would say personally that I haven't, because I've read thousands of books at this point, so I haven't really found anything these days that actually puzzles me. And that's just because I do have the blueprint, and that gives me a grander understanding of exactly what's happening here in our experience.
Right. And yeah, you referenced something that I've heard multiple people kind of reference over the years, who are really tapping into a lot of, you know, this information, a lot of this ancient wisdom and knowledge, and feeling like they almost don't belong here. And it's like, okay, I can't be here for very long. And it's funny. It actually makes me curious about something I just received. You know, it turns out that it's 11:11 today that I'm talking to you, which is absolutely perfect. when you guys are listening to this, I don't know, maybe many months from now or years from now, but it is 11:11:15, the day that we're actually recording. So I received a text right before we began recording from my partner, Anna, and she had said, oh, today's your portal day, because I'm in numerology, I'm a number 11. And with, you know, it just made me think of what you were just saying as I was reading it, because it was saying, you know, master number 11 people are very powerful and have volunteered to incarnate to help the human race. So that certainly sounds like something that, I don't know if you've ever looked at what your number is in numerology, but
it's actually 22. So
which is the master number, I guess, that's even more rare than 11, right?
Well, it's a duplicate. You know, I've always seen it's like a procession in itself. So you get 11, then you get 22, then you get 33. And and these are real triggers, or some could call it a digital time code if it actually appears on their clock. And it does create, in fact, a doorway in which leads to ourselves. Like, obviously, a lot of this can be taken externally, but it does lead to a more vast, higher octave version of self. And so if we're available for those upgrades, then we can always, you know, choose to take that and accept it and then grow with it.
Right. What a trip. Yeah. So I guess it's your portal day too, since 22 is double 11. So you mentioned, you know, powers within yourself that you've unlocked. Any of that that you would care to share?
Sure. I mean, how this works is that obviously pretty much everyone listening should be familiar with chakra centers. What chakras can actually do, and the full extent of them, I think, would get us into Marvel and into a lot of the, what I would say is the universal triggers for superheroes and those kind of things that are embedded within the consciousness. But as you begin to power up those chakras, you do actually experience certain things. I would say first for me, it was definitely lucid dreaming. And that's, of course, the ability to control your dream when you're asleep. Yeah. And that's also, that just comes with having a large amount of prana in the body. And then also having that, that real insight that you can actually get into that dream and begin to control it. So I started doing that, probably about 8 or 9 years ago, I would say. Actually, I was doing it when I was younger, And then I forgot all about it. And I kind of lost the ability. And then I was able to kind of rekindle that ability in my late 20s, as I mentioned. And one thing, though, that was a little bit different about my lucid dreaming is that times I could grab things in the dream, and like a bicycle, let's say. And mm-hmm. 2 weeks later, I would have that bicycle in the reality. And when I was younger, I actually thought everyone could do this. So that's why I never really questioned, you know, anything about it. But obviously, I figured out later on in life that that was something that was very unique, very special. So now the abilities range from different things. It's, you know, I've always laughed about trying to do something on cue because obviously a magician can be confined to their tricks. But I find that what happens is with the planetary movements is oftentimes you have these heightened abilities. And this could go anywhere from just a massive level of knowledge that hasn't been taught to you before, or what we would say is Gnosticism, right? All the way into an excessive level of strength, which I find is rather, that would be probably one of the easier abilities because it's really more tied into the mind and how you believe certain objects really are, but or what their real makeup is. And so what I would say is that one of the most keen abilities is the ability to actually see everything as something conscious, not inorganic. Right. And in doing that, being able to not only tap into it, but also nullify it, which gets into some pretty strange things. And the onset of this is basically that we believe as a species that something needs to be able to reason and think in order for it to be conscious. However, right. when you, of course, in simple meditation, you actually know that even any reasoning or thinking actually disturbs the meditation and doesn't allow you to get high enough to, you know, breach in or have that breakthrough. So right. there it is. It, just because something is sentient, it doesn't mean that it's actually intelligent per se, or has, or just because something is not sentient or thinking doesn't mean that it has, doesn't have some type of intelligence. And so when you start to accept that, what you find is that all of the objects that are around you are rather malleable. It's kind of like bending a spoon. And they're mm-hmm. malleable because what happens is that everything has to, in a certain tense, let's use the word submit to something else that is more dominant, or a more dominant frequency, a frequency that's more sure about itself. And so a lot of people have experienced this within hallucinogens, like let's say DMT. DMT is very sure about itself. It's got a pretty strong lineage that traces back farther than most can even remember. So the person is generally affected by that kind of substance, and they start to, it changes their reality. But as right. a human being, when you begin to do that, when you begin to be that more dominant frequency, let's say the frequency that's more stable and more sure than other elements, let's say, for instance, bismuth as a consciousness believes that it's bismuth. Just like we as human beings believe that we're humans until you start realizing that you're everything. And right. so as a human being that realizes they're everything, in the face of bismuth, bismuth becomes malleable and will, in a tense, obey whatever it is that you wanted to do, if you wanted to melt, if you wanted to transform itself. So these are the kind of abilities we call it. You know, this is deep fringe. Personally, I've always stayed in fringe, especially for the last 5 years, because that's how I entertain myself. Because again, the world can be circular, so it can be rather redundant. So you at times have to close out all of this, these rules and guidelines that have been set forth, and then start asking yourself, you know, how much can you really prove that they know what they're talking about? And maybe we're in something that nobody has really figured out what's going on, except for some select people that won't say anything about it. Because after all, if you ask them for $10, they won't even give it to you. Is it, hey, can I get $20? No. So what makes you think that they're going to give you the most deepest secrets about yourself? So right. these are the things that, you know, I had to start catching on to. And but what I will say is that a lot of this, it really functions on somewhat what I call the ring. And what this means is that the proximity of others that do not believe.
Right.
Because when you're in an environment of disbelief, it's very difficult for you to pierce through that frequency because, you know, there's just a constant a sound or a signal that's being broadcasted from those individuals or those things. But when you put yourself into an isolation, you'd be surprised what you're capable of doing because you've actually given yourself the space and time that is necessary to begin to manifest. So the abilities are, they're really endless. I started what I call the Innerversity, which is a school that you'll find on the Secret Energy site. And I have one course in specific about all this to where I begin to itemize, because this is, there's nothing new under the sun, if you may, but there's a lot that's been forgotten. And I begin to itemize these different abilities, what chakras they come from, and their uses. And then not only that, how you can prove in other aspects of life that they're 100% capable of being done.
Yeah, that's really fascinating. And with the Innerversity, that is basically a platform for you to teach some of these techniques and so forth, correct?
Well, what we did is we opened up a school. Well, I opened up a school, and the school is based into 9 semesters. We just got done with semester 1. And, you know, it's just some groundbreaking stuff because, you know, after, again, you have the blueprint.
You just launched it.
Yeah, I launched it about 6 months or 5 months ago. And, you know, it was just so vast. I think it's about, you know, it's, oh my goodness, it's about 7 or 8 courses within one semester. And those courses are about different things like celestial mechanics, which deals with our connection with the universe, cosmic dietetics, which deals with the energetic potential behind objects that you eat, and other ways to assume different levels of energy, such as breath. And so it gets really detailed, current and currency. It talks about how your financial currency is connected to the energetic potential within your body. You know, so each of these, what I felt like were the main topics of everything that you would really want to know is encased within that first semester. And then what the other semesters are designed to do is, of course, there'll be a lot of new stuff, but it's kind of like getting deeper into the mechanics behind how each of those things can be accomplished.
Very fascinating. I'm anxious to learn more myself. And if people want to participate in, you know, sign up for the Innerversity, they just do that through Secret Energy? And is it something that they can do in their own? Is it a live curriculum, or is it something
When it launched, it was live. Now it's archived, and they can go through all of the courses step by step in their own leisure and time. There's a lot of information provided, such as images, literature, and of course, there's the videos of the live session itself. I did it actually through live stream because I do have the live stream broadcasting equipment. And so, yeah, it's just, you know, it's fresh stuff, you know, and it's my body of work personally, though, you know, I've had hundreds of recordings all throughout the internet. So there's obviously the AstroQuest podcast. I have a huge YouTube channel called Interstanding. Yeah, actually, it's Interstanding. And so there's hundreds of videos and things, even starting back from when we began. I even have some stuff on Blog Talk Radio /7 SEVEN. And so all of that stuff is there, you know, because the Innerversity, it does have a small premium. Many people say it's basically highway robbery in a sense to how much you get for how much you pay.
But
because we didn't want to put any barriers between this type of knowledge and people, we've left a lot of stuff that really entails a lot of what we're speaking about in the Innerversity. But the Innerversity is more of like, okay, we're going to drill into it. Because anyone who's heard my past podcasts and things know I have a huge range. So sometimes they can be like, wait, I want to hear more about that. And then, you know, and maybe not hear about that again for the next few weeks. But with the Innerversity, you get that specific course and it really digs into that topic until it's really almost exhausted. And then, you know, we go on to something else.
Wow, that's fascinating. Very, very anxious to kind of dig in myself and see, you know, check out some of this content because there's already, like you said, having only recently been introduced to some of your work, there's so much, there is a lot out there. Just looking at AstroQuest, for example, I was just checking out the Keymaker series. Can you tell me a little bit about that?
Yeah, the Keymaker series actually just launched. I'm doing that in conjunction with True Frequency, my friends at True Frequency Radio, which we've been knowing each other for years. And the reason why I launched the series, it was twofold. One, I haven't been on the circuit in a while because I've actually been so busy because when I got Fringe going on, I have a lot of stuff. My profile is pretty extensive. But the unfortunate part was, in all of that, I wasn't able to actually nail down something like, okay, I'm going to be here every week. you know, actually I've been kind of running away from that because, you know, when you get the busy schedule and you're like, oh no, Saturday, I got to be on again. But, you know, since I start seeing there was kind of a clear path, at least for the next 6 or 7 months to a year, and how I can get my schedule really coordinated properly, I decided to start doing this new series called The Keymaker. And it's basically a continuation of Astral Quest, which is interactive enlightenment. And what I do in The Keymaker, though, is I allow people to ask questions. Well, they send questions to me. They can do that by going to astralquest.com/ask. And there's a form there. They fill out the form and they can ask anything. And because I'm telling you, I can't be stumped on a question. And they can ask anything, especially related to spirituality and even other topics and how it maybe pertains to spirituality. And then I will take those questions and I will put them into something that's more of a submittable to as a question. And then I'll answer those questions on the Keymaker. So this kind of keeps me, even though I always have, you know, some stuff to put out, it keeps me from having to generate brand new content because I have the questions, but it also have like a 30 to 45 minute, you know, hey, this is what's going on. This is what I just discovered. Cause it's never stopped. So this is again, year seven and going into year seven. So I can't expect it to stop now since it hasn't this much time, but I really want to do something that was really focused directly on what people are experiencing right now in real time.
Yeah. That's something that we've incorporated on the Positive Head podcast as well. Having you started off with a weekly interview with a different consciousness change maker such as yourself, and then in recent weeks started doing daily shorter podcasts. And that's one of the things that we've introduced as well, as, you know, hey, hit me with some kind of a question, comment, or smart remark, and we'll talk about it. So it's fun to do because it gets you thinking, and it gives gives you a direction to kind of riff on, I guess you would say.
Yeah, it does. And, you know, it just keeps you kind of from floating out there in space on one of, you know, what you may feel like is the best topic to talk about. And just, you know, there's a lot of stuff going on in real time. People are experiencing some things out there. And a lot of times, you know, when you learn how to create your own environment, you know, you become a soul sovereign, you're kind of isolated in a certain sense. There's a huge buffer. Now, me, I go to Vice News and I watch everything because I just, you know, I like to, you know, be informed. But in a certain tense, it's still like there's stuff going on and people want to talk directly about that. So if sometimes I won't even mention it if somebody doesn't ask me about it. So I just open that up so that people can really ask me and that I can be available for those answers.
Well, cool. I'm sure some of our listeners will want to head over and try and stump you since you're unstumpable.
Yeah, I'm unstumpable. I mean, bring it. I mean, I would love to find something. It's my pleasure.
That's awesome. So you mentioned earlier activating your chakras to increase your own personal power. How does one go about activating their chakras? Is that a whole podcast in itself?
That's a few podcasts, but you know, I can give some real keen pointers because you know I've obviously been asked that question a lot of times, so I've done my best to compress the response. And what I'll say is that you know you obviously have three aspects of yourself that you're generally dealing with. We like to say mind, body, and soul. And obviously, the one that seems to be the most what I would say is prominent at this point is the physical body. And the physical body can often hamper the activation of the chakras. And so that's to me the first thing, because obviously chakra activation, you know, I see these videos all the time that say, you know, how to activate your pineal gland. And it's, yeah, I won't say comical, but in a certain sense, if you understand, you know, what happens when you fully blow open your pineal gland, what you really would want to do before that is a lot of maintenance on the body and, you know, cleaning out the body and cleaning out your subconscious mind. So that way, when you're open, that you don't begin to manifest certain things that you really don't want to manifest, because it becomes kind of a strange out of the water arena that you're all of a sudden thrusted into. And then because you're creating as fast as you can think, it can get rather uncomfortable in there. And so to prevent that, what I do encourage people to do is to first start off in cleaning their physical body. And there's a lot of different things that are out there, and there's a lot of information on the Secret Energy website. And it's really about, of course, how to clean out mainly your bowels. And this is because obviously the chakra centers need to really utilize the primary power unit, if you may, within the body. And that is the root chakra. and getting the root chakra activated, which is most necessary because it burns up all the toxins and things, should really be the person's primary goal before opening up any of the higher chakras. And an easy way to do that, if you may, is to begin to do something like a colon cleanse. Okay. And if you can, something like a whole body cleanse, because that gets the area vibrating faster. So it allows the heat to begin to accumulate in the hearth to relight itself. And then that gets you on your way to activating the chakras. And then from that point, it's really unique to each individual to what chakra that they're actually going to begin to work with next. It's not like a 1, 2, 3, 4, bing, 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 bing. It's not actually designed like that. It's really more of a kind of picking up from where you left off even last life with your process of activation. And some of the things that reveal what I'm talking about in regards to this subject are things like human design, which is actually a method of analyzing where you're at on this part of the path with your body, and how much activation you've achieved in previous lifetimes, and you know how many centers do you have active and how many centers do you have unactive. So once again, that's human design. There's a lot of work on the internet about that. And so that's what I'll say, you know, just as a general, like, hey, you know, this is how you begin, is of course to get into that working with the body. And then also what I'll say is, you know, there's some simple general methods here about, you know, what goes on with the body and how it gets weighed down or dragged down and why it can't conduct energy. And a lot of that has to do with our diets. And so we have to realize that we really want to begin to work on moving ourselves up through the chain of matter, and to begin to, in a certain sense, learn how to pull energy from other substances that have less karma or are made out of less material. And so the range would be anything from, let's say, an animal all the way to, let's say, aether or breath or prana. And then everything in between there, which would be vegetables, minerals, and those kind of things. And so what I did personally is I've been a vegetarian for 11 years, but there is some real secrets to being a vegetarian, because obviously, or, you know, there's a lot that you can do that's wrong with the vegetarian diet, which I only came to discover much more later on. It's generally presented to everyone as the thing to do, but there's a lot of adjustments that you need to make to your body. And we call that terrain modification, giving yourself a period of time, let's say 6 months, to actually wean yourself off of certain things. And then also to know, let's use a term here loosely, but the science behind how the body functions, because of course you're going to need things like creatine, which is really what you're getting from the meat. You're going to need things like a complete protein, which is brown rice, hemp, and
chia.
Actually, it's just brown rice, hemp, and pea protein. Because chia will still fulfill one of those categories. So you just have to see what kind of protein is coming from chia. But oftentimes there's one missing. And without that one or even two, there's no bond. And with no complete protein, you'll find that, you know, your immune system will begin to drop. You'll get a little bit weaker. You'll lose weight. You know, so all these kind of things accompany the vegetarian that doesn't understand the quote unquote science behind how the body functions. But these kind of stints, if you may, are really to... should be seen more as a reward system in a certain sense, not something that you have to do. You know, you don't want to get into that whole thing because it can then become your worst enemy. But it's more of saying, okay, well, if I'm a little bit below the speed of light, if you may, then if my body or my vessel, my craft, my ship needs to pull out of this vortex, then I need to drop some things out of the hangar, or, you know, I need to release some things out of the cargo hatch. And how you can do that is by just dropping matter. And we found that, you know, obviously in the language, because the word karma as a root has the word kar, and kar actually means in most languages flesh or meat. And so, you know, we find that, you know, if you drop some of the flesh and meat, you can at times pick up more in the frequency, and this could give you the boost that's necessary to get over that hump. Especially for those that may be experiencing what we call the vicious cycle, which is just like stuff's going wrong. You can't seem to do right for doing wrong. And, you know, it just seems like there's no way out, et cetera, et cetera. So these are like the methods that we teach of how to, you know, get things boosted. So there's a whole range of things. And obviously I've even gotten to a point to where that I was really, well, it's a process, because you go to vegetables kind of next, and now you're in the vegetable kingdom. But it's not to say that you can't actually go somewhere from there too. A lot of the vegetarians can begin to experiment with just metals, and minerals, which have a vast effect and array on the body. We've done, you know, complete segments on monatomics, and we actually carry what we know is to be the world's only monatomics that are produced in a real laboratory. And then beyond that, you get into breath. And that actually was really my advent into a lot of the paranormal. And that started for me years ago. I actually started before dropped a lot of the elements beside me. And the breath and the whole body breathing became very instrumental for me to basically understand that you can get high off oxygen. So it's free.
Right.
And then where it can really take you. And then obviously after a while, you start realizing that you don't need to breathe when you become a master in breathing. And then you tap into another force, which some call prana, which is more of made out of ether. And then this gets you into somewhat of a more subtle version of energy. And what you're doing and this is why it's good to have a good balance. I'm not saying drop one and pick up another. It's good to have a balance of all these, but you're actually feeding this other body. So let's say if it's the spiritual body eats the air versus the mental body will benefit from it. The physical body will benefit from it, but not as much as the spiritual body. So you kind of put the stuff into different columns. Obviously, the physical body is going to benefit more from vegetables and meat than the spiritual body will. So, but it will have some kind of benefit on the spiritual body. So it's this kind of sliding scale of elements, which is somewhat different for everyone. And that's why there's no one way to do it. There's no one specific diet. This is not a dogma in a certain tense. We just give some criteria and then the person just analyzes their own life to see, you know, what they need to do and how that's going to work for them.
Right. Are you familiar? I'm sure that you are familiar with breatharianism or sun gazing. Those are other, you know, techniques, I suppose, that people have used to, I find it really personally fascinating. You know, people that, you know, claim, I personally haven't done it or seen it, but claim to, you know, go for extended periods of time, you know, decades without any eating anything. And that's something that in modern society and culture is unheard of. You know, it really, once you kind of dig in and look at some of these claims, I don't know if you've had any experience with breatharians or have experimented in that realm yourself, but I find it very intriguing to say the least.
For sure. I mean, I've obviously delved into it myself and looked into others that were. And what I found is that the key component to something like breatharian is actually the quality of the breath. And what we'll find, the quality of the oxygen. And so what we'll find is that it's a lot easier, obviously, in somewhere like the Himalayas, where, you know, you're raised really to deal with the prana and to deal with breathing versus right smack dab in the middle of New York City, where, you know, there's going to be so many metals in the air that your body is actually going to need to purge and to remove those toxins. And in that process, it's going to burn energy. And then, so that's going to kind of put you out of the ability to be able to use air as your only substance because you're going to get really hungry. And so, you know, there's definitely some real mechanics to it, but there's some authenticity to it because, you know, we do have not just stories, but, you know, actual accounts of individuals. I generally go into some more of the ancient traditions, but of, you know, many of the lamas and the monks actually going into somewhat of the stage that frogs go into when it gets in wintertime, where most of the body shuts down except for a small part. Because it's big, it's big to not, in a certain sense, the main key to it all is to not burn energy. Because, you know, if you burn it, burn fuel, then you're going to need to, you know, you're going to need to replenish. And this is a big part of what I call, you know, there's only two ways to find balance unless you understand the hybrid version. But one of the ways to find balance is obviously not to send any waves. And meaning not to be basically motionless and still. And that's what you find monks doing. They just, you know, no thoughts, no movements, no karma, no action, no reaction. And then what that brings them into is a space that there's no energy consumed. And so when they're not burning prana, then they don't have to live in the pranayama, which of course is earth. So they say you use prana, you live in the pranayama. So in this tense, you know, that's how certain things are achieved, but you'll see that they're extremely isolated from the reality altogether. If something is going on that needs to be done, then someone is doing it for them. And that's why they have generally caretakers. I think there's a movie called, I think it was the original Samsara, not the documentary, but there was actually a movie, I believe, called Samsara. And this is a somewhat of a movie about this. And it begins with them actually going and raking this lama up or this monk up from a 8 or 5 or 10 year stint, excuse me, a 5 or 10 year stint of doing this, to where you go in, the hair is all long, the nails are long, and the person's barely even conscious, has to be roused from their slumber the proper way, et cetera. And then where they really are is in those planes that don't really function on the same mechanics that Earth does.
Wow. Yeah, I'm not familiar with that movie, but that sounds fascinating. I know there's a monk that they uncovered recently who they claim is actually in one of these states. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you saw this. He's, you know, supposedly was meditating, you know, 70 years ago, and his body is not decomposed. And they're saying that he actually is just in this, you know, altered state of consciousness, and that he's not actually dead, which is a fascinating concept. And of course, challenges everything that the norm that is believed to be the way, you know, life and death and the different states of consciousness that are even possible, or of course, are being completely challenged with some of these concepts.
Yeah, there's going to be a lot of challenging going on here in the future, you know, as, you know, the evolutionary change on the planetary system continues to take place, which it will.
Right, yeah. Right. Yeah, definitely seems to be in full swing. I know I often referenced being on a spiritual path myself for, you know, 18 years or so now. And for the first 15 of those years, it was reading books by people who are unreachable and nowhere. And, you know, someone out there wrote this book and it's pretty fascinating and awesome. And as far as interacting with anyone who is tapped into sort of the spiritual awakening that I felt like I was tapping into personally, and I would talk about this stuff incessantly and just am so fired up with, you know, obviously you teach best what you most need to learn. And for me, it's one thing to kind of know this stuff conceptually, and then it's been the journey of really putting it into practice and evolving myself. And so I would talk about it to anyone who would listen. And, you know, for the longest time, it was people saying, okay, that's very interesting, or what are you smoking? And now in the last few years, of course, it's, you know, I'm meeting people like yourself, having this conversation, someone who has just got so much knowledge and so much that I can actually shut up for once and learn from. And I just love it, you know, because really the more you know, the more you realize you don't know. And that seems to be my world in the last few years, is just coming in contact with people who have so much vast information and so much that I can grow and learn from. So, from the viewpoint of my own soul's journey, it has been a slow burn leading up to this rapid increase in vibration and you know, information that is permeating every corner of my life now.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I can definitely say it's trending, but unlike bell bottoms, this one's not going to go out of style.
Exactly. It's something, it can't go out of style. And
Once you get a little taste of it, I mean, you can't untaste.
You can't unsee. Yeah, you can't unsee this stuff. And speaking of seeing, you know, you talked a little bit about activating the third eye, and, you know, curious, because it sounds like you have had so many interesting experiences, you know, personally in your own development. What has been your experience with activation of the third eye, and what kind of things, if someone goes down this path of, you know, cleaning their body and working on activating their chakras, and you talked a little bit about it, but maybe you could elaborate a little bit more on the activation of the third eye and what someone can expect to be revealed.
For sure. Well, you know, definitely I've fully blown open my third eye, and it's good that it actually, like most orifices in the body, it kind of closes itself. So, you know, it's, you know, just like all the orifices of the body, they generally will close themselves if they're not worked on. So what happens is when you open the third eye, it depends on if you're looking directly into the reality or if you're looking within. Because obviously many of the experiences, like personally, my experiences first came through breathing. But then later on, I actually started, I had this thing with what we just call diamond tree. And, you know, that's just for lack of other terms, but it's really DMT, and we'll just say that once. And I kind of went through a process where I went in about 90 times.
Oh, wow.
And what that allowed me to do is it allowed me to, especially with having all this knowledge and information beforehand, begin to really discover what was actually going on in the reality and what these chakras really do. And with the third eye, what it does is it pretty much lays a HUD, if you may, a heads up display over the reality. It looks like somewhat of a grid or a net. And what happens with the eyes are, is it lays over this concave triangle, which is basically a triangle without the straight lines. It's like curved lines, but infinite amounts of them. And this allows you to actually see the spaces within spaces. That's the easiest way to explain it. And this allows you to be able to perceive things that others cannot. Like you can actually see things in the fabric of the reality. And those things range from signatures, meaning things that have actually been done in that particular space. The real identity of many of the objects that are around us, even if you think that they're inorganic, such as plastic, metal, your TV, a tripod, et cetera, because
right.
all these elements, all these things are actually made up of elements, and those elements are rather sentient. And wow. and then also what it allows you to do is transcend space-time, because what happens is it's like you have this beam, and I'm just choosing the right words here. You have this beam that pierces everything to a point where it can't lie to you. So it can't actually cloak itself in the same garb that things in this normal reality will clothe itself in to disguise itself, if you may. This happens with people. This happens with inanimate objects. And so when you look at it, you pierce it. And then that right. reveals to you what it really is. It's geometric makeup. It's sound. Because generally the chakras, the third eye, you know, hopefully being one of the final chakras to activate in a person's process, your chakras actually collapse and it tends to like Russian dolls. So let's say if there's a chakra to hear and there's a chakra to see, when they collapse, you now hear see.
Gotcha.
And hear seeing allows you to see everything that sound is coming from. And then you see those. You see those dimensions, if you may, like tubes. And when you travel down those tubes, you can get to the origin of that sound. And so it becomes, you know, it's a wild adventure. And, you know, obviously it needs to be controlled to a certain aspect by self, not by anybody else, but by self, because you start to realize that you're wholly in control of manifestation. It's the same thing that you're doing in the dream, that in most tenses, unless the dream is being programmed, the person is actually manifesting the entire dream, but thinking, because they're not either aware that they have that much creativity or that they even have the ability to do that, that they're actually experiencing something. So this is more of you take a step and then the actual step itself appears. It's what's going on in the dream. So you have a thought, but right before that thought, there is the actual essence of it. This is called the inception point. Because obviously right. coming into Earth is a conception. And then before you enter Earth, that's inception. So all right. these inceptions are happening. And sometimes, you know, for most people, if it's getting the best of you, you can actually think that, oh my goodness, I was in this dream and you were there and, you know, Michael Jackson was there. And, but all that's happening is that the frontal lobe, and the cerebral cortex in all of this wet work, as I call it, is so, wow. I mean, it's amazing stuff. I mean, even the greatest and grandest machines that we've ever built can't even come close to it. You know, this stuff is so, mystical and amazing that it can actually create and project things that you wouldn't even believe that you have the ability to do. And this is because all of this data, if you may, is located, it's biolocal, so it's not actually somewhere, but it's all in one mainframe that we call the hive. And in the hive, because we all have access to that through the geometry that is incorporated within our bodies, through the chakras, the physical structure, the sounds that we make, et cetera, we can pull that data, if you may, in real time. And so right. it streams to us in every aspect. And so the more that you begin to get involved with it, the more potential it has. And it's actually from what we were perceived to be endless to what can really be generated from it and what can be experienced. So that's, you know, that's the third eye. It's like, you know, you know, it's amazing.
That's all?
that's the limit of our thought boundary and our language. But yeah, that's what we're talking about, is accessing the limitless.
Yeah, it's one of those things. And you talked about, you know, realizing you're creating basically how powerful of a creator you are. And what I believe so few people realize is you're such a powerful creator that you actually created this experience. You just have amnesia to the inception of it. Right.
For sure.
And once you start realizing that you're the one behind this story and you're literally the lead actor and director in your own movie, this is your own private universe. In this moment, I'm just talking to a reflection of self and vice versa. I'm just a prop in your movie and you're a prop in mine. And really, this is my own private reality. Once you start wrapping your brain around that one and then having experiences like you're talking about where you're really accessing, you know, so much information beyond the five senses, it really just is it's a whole different life experience. And it's so crazy to think. Sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just saying the cup becomes half full then. Like you start realizing, you know, maybe this is just began more so than, hey, this is the end.
And yeah,
you realize
exactly.
There is no end.
Exactly. The journey is the goal. No matter how far you make it, you'll never be reach your end. And thank goodness for that, because eternity is a long time.
Well, yeah, I mean, we already proved a while ago that people were more scared of that than they are of death. Because, you know, when you figure out that there is no end to this, that could become a little bit more startling than that, you know, there is an end. Because, you know, some people do want to get off and get back on again. And so, you know, this is somewhat hilarious. And that's why I call it, you know, it's somewhat trapped in perfection. We have to understand exactly how vast our consciousness is and how capable it is of doing different things. It's basically perfect. So in that tense, it's like, it's easier than for a person to think of concepts like death and think that they're real, because what's behind all of that is actually perfection conducting all of it. And it's just like what you're saying. It's like, you know, when you realize everything is geocentric to you, regardless, like I'll be orbiting you. You see everything outside of your own eyes. I'm not actually behind your eyes and they're in there with you per se in this reality. So in that tense, you're the central character. And that's why, you know, we really worked most in the beginning to eliminate a lot of the external eidolons, if you may, the ideas of these vast consciousnesses such as God that were actually outside of the person, more so than realizing the true nature to all of this, and to that our power is within, and then our connection with everything is within. And so, yeah, you know, this is like preaching to the choir and intense to talking that kind of stuff. So, you know, we can kind of politely go on to another topic, but that's what it really is.
there is a list of topics. Like I said, there's so many things that it's almost one of those things with you. It's like, okay, I've got a list of all kinds of exciting things. Which one do I touch on? Because
I'm surprised that we've gotten so much out in 1 hour.
yeah. So far, so good. So we'll go a little bit further, and then maybe what we can do is look at, you know, doing a you know, second version, if you're up for it, because I think,
you know me, I'm in it. I'm in this.
Good. I love it. So speaking of the, you know, being sort of the center of your own universe, as we've just touched on, is the body really a universe in itself? Is the microcosm and macrocosm, are they all just reflections of the same thing? And what proof have you found in your, you know, journey to kind of, because I assume I know your answer, it is yes. So what proof do you have of this? How have you been shown this to be the case?
Well, beyond the host, you know, because I always have to mention that, because until a person realizes that they are Godhead, then their reality is actually hosted. Just like, you know, like websites, they're hosted by something else. And the easier way to explain that is that, you know, if you look at computers, when you have hard drives, you can have you'll have a master drive and then you'll have a slave drive. And there's absolutely nothing different between the master and the slave, except for how it's hooked up. And so this is kind of the part of what we're experiencing in the reality. Until we become adept or adults, which those words kind of work together, then we will need something to kind of host this experience for us until we're ready to take the reins and pull the thing off of autopilot and do our thing. And so what I found is that the sheer proof that our body is in fact a universe actually leads into a lot of ancient knowledge, but I'll make it as current as possible. And that's really the organs, because if you notice that the word organ does in fact mean something that plays sound. And anyone who's ever studied chakras knows that the chakras actually tie into the organs. That's why there's not just seven chakras. There's actually quite a few different chakras in the body, but there's some primaries. And so it's the same thing with the universe, that there's infinite amounts of planets out there. But according to where we are, there are some primary planetary systems that have influence, if you may, over us. And then the ancient story goes is that these organs actually tied into actual vibrations that could do little of anything other than be what they were. So they decided to come into an agreement with one another. And that created what we know as the physical body and this immediate universe, which is all connected. So the actual physical body in man is a microcosm, and woman is a microcosmic version of the cosmos, with the organs playing as the planetary systems, the chakras and their movements playing as the orbits, the sounds from the vibration playing as the resonation that comes off of the star systems that give them light and make them so unique. And then all that being in one body, creating this word that we call universe, which actually, when you break it down, means united, which is uni, but in conflict, which is verse. So in fact, the body is constantly in conflict, because, you know, if you drink a Coca-Cola, your taste buds and your brain is now at war with your liver, because surely the liver and the stomach is not going to like the experience that it's about to have. But each part of the body is actually in a war for dominance. So this is known as the battlefield of Arunja, and it tends to where you have to become the king of kings, lord of lords, or god, or whatever you want to call it, the master of your own innerverse. And, you know, there's numerous connections, like the arms have a tendency to correspond with Mars. And sure enough, arms is an anagram for the word Mars. And obviously Mars is about war. It's also protection and courage. But anytime you go into a fight, you generally are fighting with your hands. Your torso is Taurus. And that torsion field is not only the geometric aspect of the creation itself, but also in the planetary system of the Taurus and the seven stars of the Pleiades, et cetera, is known to be the birth and inception point of many of the beings that actually live here. And so it goes on and on and on as you study the astronomy, not so much as just astrology, even though that definitely connects. But when you say astronomy, people, maybe it's scientific. So the astronomy behind how the cosmos and the immediate universe is set up is actually a blueprint, even if you just lay it out the proper way, of the body, or what's known as the cadmon in a certain tense, because the body has a masculine and a feminine side. Even if you're primarily masculine or primarily feminine, meaning you incarnated as a male or a female, you still do have a dual aspect to your consciousness. That is what we would say is positive and negative, or masculine and feminine. However, the wobble, which is, you know, what most are working to repair, to actually come into balance. So that way they become even, or what do they call it? Even-handed, if you may. But that 23.5, I believe, or 26, whatever degree wobble on the planet is actually synonymous with why some are more partial to a certain hemisphere of their body and consciousness, et cetera. And when correcting that wobble, then you actually become, let's say, androgen in your consciousness, to where you can actually birth something unique and begin to take on your aspect beyond the sun, which is actually a real place. That the sun is more of a gate. And when you go through it, because it leads to the core, at least to galactic core, you come out the other side, you actually get into a space that we just know as the realm of the unbegotten. And this may be getting a little bit more into the depth, but the realm of the unbegotten is basically, it transcends time. There's no time there. So it's where we all are now, unless we're doing the whole division, and where we always will be. It's like where grandma goes when she dies, except for the eidolons, or the ideas of who grandma really is, which still remain here. And so we really have in front of us a glorious experience because we will rejoin our family. And especially because, and people want to prove this, it's because 70% of the body is water anyway. And no matter what kind of sarcophagus or whatever they put you in, most of you is going to evaporate within the first month or 49 yeah. days of your experience after you living on Earth, and is going to collect itself back with what it really is. So all that water, which is really sentient, I know many people who've had experiences with water, is most of your family, while all of those other elements are going to break themselves down also and rejoin themselves based on ionic bonds. So this is things that you can see under the microscope and things that more pertain to physics. And so, you know, it's a very miraculous journey that we're actually on. The death and the reincarnation processes is just another icing on the cake. This is like PlayStation 9 or something.
Right.
But obviously it can become a bit much for when it's not perceived that way. And it can actually become more of a pin if it's not perceived in the proper way, meaning it could actually become what people feel like is a prison, which is sometimes synonymous with the prism, which is, you know, when you shine that clear light into the prism, it becomes seven colors. And there's two other colors, white and black, which we don't need to elaborate on now. But basically, it becomes this experience of races. It becomes its experiences of zodiacs. It becomes the experiences of these dualities and these different aspects, to where at times you can't even see how you would even connect if you're black with white or if you're red with blue. But if you pull right. off of all of it for one moment and have that opportunity to see the, let's say, the Archimedean point, this is the point to where you can actually see everything. And then you would understand that, oh, wow, this is all one grand structure of the same thing. And if I wasn't so close to it, like having the hand and right onto the face and trying to read something on your palm, if I wasn't so close to it in the experience, gave myself a moment to pull back off of it, then I would realize that. And that's sometimes what the isolation does for many individuals that are on that spiritual quest. When they get a chance to pull out of the matrix and to shut everything down for a moment, then they start having the deeper realizations of what they really are and who they really are, et cetera.
Wow. So you talked about the realm of the unbegotten and, you know, of course, reincarnation you've touched on a little bit. What in your from your perception, what happens to us after we die?
Well, as a professional reincarnator, that's actually a term we coin. It means to be able to guide your ship. I think Dan Winters says, you know, it's a tornado that knows how to steer itself. What happens is that you go to the frequency that you correspond to, because what happens is a person spends most of their life polarized, choosing what they want and what they don't want, until they basically become, well, see, they start that way. And that's really what the zodiac sign is. See, we should work to be cosmoses, not zodiac signs. And that's why most people can be narrowed down to the aspects of their zodiac sign, especially for a person who really knows how to read zodiac. They say, well, what are you? And, you know, I'm a Libra. I was born on this day. And, you know, you give the whole synopsis and then this person could start reading you like a book. And it's because that's the planetary influence. Those are the frequencies or the chakra, if you may, that you're primarily broadcasting. So what happens is that when you get into this next aspect of yourself, so let's just conclude the question. So what happens when you die? You go to a diametric opposition. See, this word die means to split. So this life that you previously used to live is now divided from you. There's a hard wire in the consciousness that says, okay, I did that. Now I need to go and do something different. And different means opposite to what you were doing before. This is diametric. So you literally go to opposite of what you were before. And that's like the other side of your zodiac sign. And then you come in through the reincarnation process again through that planetary system. That's the portal you take. It shapes, molds, and fashions you into that. And then you pop up here on Earth again, but with this different aspect. And also you don't remember that you were actually here before. In most cases, sometimes there's deja vu. And it's because you pass through quite a few magnetic fields. And because the entire body, even where our memory is encased, which is not inside of our brain, is electromagnetic, this has the effect of like rubbing a credit card over a magnet. It just wipes off all the information. So A part of this training is to become unmovable, which is beginning to put things in your consciousness that are actually true, because division is falsehood. So anything that right. pertains to division won't sustain itself in a cosmic storm. It'll just blow away. And that's why the person doesn't have any real memories of all of these different individual and all this stuff that they thought that they were and all that, because none of that is true. Only truth can survive going through these kind of vortexes, et cetera. So for most people, again, this is a process that is conducted almost on autopilot. And this is why you see the symbol of recycling as the Megan star, or the actual star of David, as they call it, which is, you know, not the real term, but that particular star, as you see it in the recycling symbol, is because that is the process of a person going through reincarnation, which is recycling of the soul, through six. Six is also synonymous with the number sex. When two people are having sex, there's a friction. That friction creates light, a specific kind of light, though, because when two people are coming together, no light is more unique than that, because each person has their own aspects. And then the reincarnation point, that becomes a reincarnation point for this soul that's coming back in through its transmigration. When it leaves the body, it will travel down what we call the ley lines, because only spirits can travel in this, spirits travel in a straight line. So they go down these ley lines, which are like in the forest. They're like the paths that are walked down most. So kind of automatically you go down those lines, unless you're a professional reincarnator, which a professional reincarnator is going to be more aware of what's going on, because you don't actually have to wait until quote unquote death to die. And that's why some of the depths have said, you know, I die daily, or you should die all the time. And this is dying basically to one old consciousness or frequency, and then birthing yourself again to something new. So that way you become more malleable, and it tends to, you become more, you can flow. You're not as rigid as a straight line going to your next processing station to come out and get another run at this thing and be another character in the play. You're more of looking to expand your consciousness into a full-on cosmos, actually graduating to becoming an oversoul, which is the position that comes up next. And then you learn how to host realities, multiple organisms, just like a parent has to host the children, but more on a vast level, to where, you know, you begin to understand how to work the, let's say, multi-core processor that you have
right.
more better, because none of this stuff is like, it's not... I can just say it like this. It's not as, it's not a game in a tense to like, they're just not going to let you play with it and you don't know what you're doing. And when right. I say they, it's more of like a collective consciousness. It just reads vibrations and frequencies. It's not necessarily like plotting on us and all of that. It's right. just reading signatures. And that's why the professional reincarnator learns how not to emit signatures like division, choices, this kind of things. Thus kind of flying right by the archonic system and how it
the snags
it never sees you, and so it never detects you, so you can get beyond the net.
Wow, what a fascinating perspective.
You have Savannah. To see that animated.
Yeah, exactly. Let's do that. Let's manifest that movie. So, as I mentioned, I would love to have you on for a second part, because I have, as you talk, I get more questions and I had a bunch to begin with. So, what I would like to do at this point is maybe just ask you a couple of the standard things to kind of wind this particular part one down, and then we can revisit, part two and the following week if, you know, schedule permits and things like that for you, and
for sure.
and continue to dive into this brilliant mind of yours. So one thing that I would like to ask to kind of take this to an end for now, story of synchronicity. It's something that I ask all of my guests. I'm fascinated by the concept of synchronicity. We had a synchronicity coming together for this podcast. So I would love to hear any, you know, personal story of synchronicity or positive paranormal event. And I'm sure you've got more than one under your hat, but please hit us with something good.
Well, for me, the one that I had for this conversation, I'll say, because, you know, obviously, yeah, there's quite a few. But it's like a while ago, like when I first started really studying this, I started studying this as a child. And when I got into my teens, I would say my early 20s, I kind of got into it again. Like I really started studying a lot of spirituality, but really from more of a Gnostic level. Like I was reading a lot of the Gnostic stuff, like the Nag Hammadi stuff, the Sitiopigrapha, the Apocrypha. And I started noticing, because I'm just a stickler for detail, that there was a constant mention of this name. And it would literally omit the name. Like it would be, you know, one is going to come and they're going to be given the name, or, you know, and then he had the word. And then I was just like, well, what is this name and what is this word? Because even the beginning of the Bible begins, in the beginning was the word. So instead of me just blowing past it, I'm like, so what was the word? And that became like a fascination for about 3 years for me, to where I was on this constant search for this word. Mm-hmm. Until at one point I started getting these really high level books, and it was just basically from keyword to keyword. Like I would read certain books, they would mention something that I knew nothing about. And then I would find a book that started talking about that more, and I would read that book. And so as I work my way up the ladder, if you may, I start coming across books that actually had this word. And since I had been, you know, already, what I'll say is embedded with so much fear about it, I actually just kept the word there. And I never used it until one day. I mean, it wasn't even anything going on in my immediate atmosphere to provoke it, beside that I was doing an experiment with ultraviolet. I was doing a project with ultraviolet, which is actually the highest color on the frequency spectrum before we can't see color anymore. And I found out later on that ultraviolet actually fast forwards the mind. But I was actually working with this ultraviolet, and I came out of the room at the conclusion of the project, and I was looking up at the corner of the wall. And then all of a sudden I had this deja vu that lasted 5 minutes.
Wow.
Now, a couple moments of deja vu is already eerie enough. 5 minutes is unbearable in a certain tense. And this is actually the onset of me writing the code to the Matrix. And in that experience, after that one experience, something came to my mind and said, well, maybe, you know, I should try this word. And in my mind, I also believed that the word didn't do anything, because I didn't have that much, you know, real belief in such things. Despite an extended lifetime of understanding spirituality, I hadn't actually had really any experiences on my own. So I got the word, and I started saying the word. And then all of a sudden I felt this vibration in the body that was so strong that I stopped saying it. I said, oh my goodness, this actually does something.
Wow.
And so I cleaned up the room and everything. And I just got there and I started saying this word again. And within maybe 4 or 5 times of saying this word, I couldn't actually stop the energy from building. And then all of the metal in the room started shaking. And then as the energy was continuously going up through the body, at a certain point, I just, let's say, shorted out. Like I just lost consciousness, kind of. And I just remember going up out of the room and then going somewhere and then coming back, all within like a twinkling of an eye, like really fast. And then when I came back, I had, wherever I had went, in my hands. Like I could just feel like whatever it was in my hands. And then that was when I began to know all of this stuff.
Wow.
So this has made me, in a certain tense, believe that there is for sure something out there. There are other spaces. And the way that we actually gain information and knowledge in this day and time is rather primitive to what I experienced in the room, which was somewhat of a light transfer. And ever since then, I've been unpacking that information ever since. So it was in such a deep encryption, because, you know, I have a very strong technical background. So it's easier for me to explain the stuff that, you know, we store stuff in, you know, terabytes, petaflops, whatever. But this stuff was stored, this information was stored in light. And when you start unpacking it or decrypting it, it could take years. So whatever happened in that moment has taken me years to unpack. And that's my, you know, that's my one for today of one of those positive paranormal experiences yeah. to where I came in thinking, hey, this is just, you know, I don't even know what you're doing, to all of a sudden completely evolving my consciousness. And, you know, wow. some people have asked me, you know, because I've told the story maybe once or twice, they've asked me for the word. But personally, I don't feel like it's my responsibility to put someone, because there was 2 weeks of me literally experiencing life with all the chakras open as a person wow. who had never really experienced our power. And that was slightly altering. And I realized that that's the point of what they say, it's the point of no return. Like, you never come back the same. It either goes well or it doesn't. And in many cases, it hasn't. And, you know, this is not to scare anybody away from it, but again, opening up chakras and things, you know, you're completely plunged into seeing the world as it really is. From just a few minutes ago, none of this was going on except for in your greatest science fiction novel. And right. so, yeah, that's my experience. And, you know, it's amazing, because also there was no other substances, nothing. Like, I didn't engage yeah. in that kind of stuff then. So, you know, just wow. that's what I had to share.
What a fascinating story. And would you say that a lot of the insights and wisdom that you're obviously just bubbling over with has come from that experience of essentially a download, or in a sense you were uploaded and then brought back, however you want to look at it? Would you say a lot of this information has come to you from that experience or similar experiences?
For sure. It's because now, I mean, now that I didn't know anything about what I know now as far as metaphysics and things. But what I did was, is somehow I opened a pipeline between me and my higher self, right. which sometimes for many people can be perceived as God. But it's, you know, you actually exist on other octaves. And when you connect with that, when you basically break down the walls, even for a moment, you gain all of that knowledge and ability that always resides within you. And it's even in a person, it's in every person's subconscious DNA framework, et cetera. And it's just up to them to extract it. So in a right. certain sense, we become the miners of ourselves, you know, and right. we're, you know, we have these jewels that we, our chakras are jewels, and you need to polish them, refine them, and do all of that, but for yourself. So,
right.
Yeah.
Right. And it sounds like Interversity would be a great place for people who are interested in taking that journey to start to go down this similar path.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's definitely a treat. I mean, it has 50-something five-star reviews, so there's never been a four-star review. So that says a lot wow. about it. I mean, I poured, so I have this integrity thing going on. So for me, it's, I'm always trying to one-up my previous self. I'm not really in a competition with other people, but, you know, I really, really wanted this to be something that was different than, you know, what I'm doing now, which is, if you can imagine, you can go to AstroQuest podcast and those kind of things are full of this type of information, but I really wanted to even see if I can enhance it more. And I believe that we were able to accomplish that with the Interversity.
Wonderful. Wonderful. This has been awesome, man. I feel like I have so much to learn from you. And I'm getting such amazing insights and things from you. So I thank you
so much
for coming on.
I had
on.
A great time also, man. I mean, you're an excellent host, because generally you'd be surprised. I get all these interviews and the people are like, all right, I'm just going to put you on and then you go ahead and go, you know, and it's just So I really appreciate you having those questions and, you know, being very inquisitive about the subject matter itself, because it really helps a lot. It helps me to transcend, you know, just the flesh in a certain sense and to go into that stage to where I'm just bringing the information to the audience and those who need to hear it, which is the synchronicity. So yeah, exactly. I definitely thank you for that.
Thank you so much, man. This has been awesome. Brandon. And I will touch base and we'll get something scheduled in the next, within the next 2 weeks.
Okay. Amazing. Have a great evening.
Well, everyone, that concludes our episode. As for all of you out there listening, remember to subscribe to the Positive Head podcast on iTunes and give us a good review while you're at it. Otherwise, until next time, remember, as long as you ain't dead, you're already positive ahead. Be well, everyone.